Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight. Every color of day. Swirling around at night.
There goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, on this first Thursday in January 2006 to a special edition of Dave's Gone By. Wasn't expecting to be here tonight, but I am doing one extra show before the program comes back later in January. I'm actually taking a couple of weeks break and then coming back on a different night, different time. So you got to kind of look for where Dave's Gone By is going to be in 2006 on GBB. But tonight, thought I would do something special and go over some of the cool and fun moments that we had over the past year on the show. Last week, I mentioned what they were, and I thanked all the guests who appeared, but I didn't get to actually play any excerpts or segments. So tonight is going to be songs, it's going to be stories, it's going to be jokes, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to start when the first person to appear on the show in 2005, folk singer Chris Smither.
Hi, this is Chris Smither, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By on WGBB AM 1240.
Do you have a favorite song of yours?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay.
No. The favorite one is often the one I wrote last, just because it's new. But.
Well, come to think of it, your last album, Train Home, is dated 2003,
right.
And here we are, and it's 2005.
Yeah.
So does that mean you've got another handful of...
Oh, they're coming. They're coming. Most of them are still embryonic, you know, but they're shaping up. I'll be playing at least one, maybe two or three new ones at Joe's Pub.
Oh, excellent. Let me ask you, one of the things about Train Home is that there are a couple of cover versions on there. Have you gotten into that recently more of doing other people's songs?
I've always done two or three. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I often throw in a traditional blues, you know, thing as well. But I've done covers all my life.
And who are the folks that you listen to in this day and age? What artists? What groups?
You know, one of my favorites, and I still have to go out and get his new record too. But Martin Offler.
Oh, okay.
I think Martin Offler is one of the most interesting guys around.
Okay.
You know, he's a closet folky. Everybody thinks of him as a big rock and roll star, you know, but you know, he's just a great songwriter, and he really finds interesting things to write about. He does a lot of every seems like almost every record he does has a historical ballad on it that just really sends me. I love the, and plus he's just a fabulous guitar player.
Well, yeah, I mean, did you pick up anything from the way, what guitarists influenced the way that your style? Or does it all go back to Lightnin' Hopkins?
It all goes back to John Hurt and Lightnin' Hopkins, really. But, you know, there are Martin Offler, for one, you know, just the way he can sustain notes above while he keeps playing. I don't know, he sounds like two or three people at once sometimes.
But you've also mentioned that your style of playing evolved over the years, that it's gotten simpler in a way.
I think it has, you know, to a degree. Well, I finally learned, you know, it took me a long time to learn how to play slowly.
What is that? I mean, why?
Because the spaces are just as important as the notes.
Mm. Okay. And so that it was just a conscious effort to slow it down and play less?
I don't think
less,
it was so
or?
Conscious. It's just, I suddenly realized, you know, that I could compare, you know, one record to the next and see that it was, you know, that there was a more measured pace to it, and at my best, I think that's better, because when you're young, you tend to be frenetic. I always admire a young player who can play slow stuff, because it's contrary to what your hormones are telling you.
And it's also sort of like what they used to say about
when Neil Young, who was still in his heyday, but when he was in the early heyday, and he would do a guitar solo, and he's like, well, he's just playing the same note, but oh, it's the right note. And the Beatles were pretty much clean. I mean, I'm sure they were all drunks.
Thought, I couldn't believe that anybody who made such beautiful music as the Beatles didn't know about marijuana. And they were singing, I can't hide, I can't hide, I can't hide. I thought they were singing, I get high, I get high, I get high. I get high.
But did you feel guilty in retrospect that on some level, yes, you changed the level of music and you... on some level affected the fact that we have Sergeant Pepper, that we have Blonde on Blonde, that we have...
Well, I don't think that's anything to be ashamed of. I'm proud of that.
Well, but you, in a way, you may have also caused, like, what happened to Jimi Hendrix or Janis Joplin. People...
Well, Jimi Hendrix had his own dope thing. I never, you know... I was friends with Jimi.
You knew Jimi Hendrix,
Miles
too.
Miles Davis.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've always been friends with black people because I love black people. Now I'm a friend of Amiri Baraka, who was a black activist, one of America's greatest living poets. I've known him for 40, 50 years.
Okay.
We've been friends.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that. My question was really about the fact that drugs became so popular, and to an extent, I think it was because the Beatles and Dylan and the Stones made it
cool. Well, you can't
cool.
blame it on Beatles and Dylan, you know, because these guys... Everybody was smoking pot and trying all kinds of recreational drugs. And they were trying, you know, heroin, too.
Right. Well, you know, I have one question about Dylan and drugs, and it's never been answered properly for me, so I really want to know about this. When we all know, of course, during the whole Blonde on Blonde years, that he was stoned pretty much all the time, right? You know, and doing speed or whatever else. Was he around the time after the Rolling Thunder tour, but before the Christian gospel stuff, was there a point when he was really wrecking himself? Because his voice, that's when his voice changed.
I wasn't his friend at that time, so I don't really know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All I know is that when I first met him, he told me he was a junkie, and I didn't believe him. I didn't believe him because he just didn't seem like a junkie.
Well, you first met him in 63, so
yeah.
He wouldn't have been then.
Well, who knows, you know, because he's always fooling around with junk.
And you had mentioned in another interview that the Rolling Stones, not just Keith, but Mick, too, were
I just wrote a piece. I just finished the first draft of another book called Mick and Miles. It's about the time I took Mick Jagger up to meet Miles Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns into a hilarious mystery.
Why, what happened?
And it starts out with me and Mick in the Hotel St. Regis, in his room in the Hotel St. Regis. I used to score heroin for him. And we're just snorting heroin. And that's how the story starts out.
By the way, you are clean now.
What?
Well, I was just going to make sure everybody realizes that you're clean. You've been clean for how long?
Well, you know, it's I was smoking cocaine. I was smoking marijuana. I was smoking cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
In the mid-1980s, I finally realized that smoke is anti-life. Smoke should never enter human lungs. Not smoke from a burning mattress, not smoke from a marijuana joint, not smoke from a cigarette, not smoke from the exhaust pipe of a car, not smoke from a smokestack, from factory smokes. No smoke or pollutant should ever enter human lungs, because smoke is anti-life.
Did you ever
hear that? I abide by that, and I've lived my life since then that way, you know. But I'm 76 right now, you know, and I'm getting close to the end.
That was Hal Aronowitz on Dave's Gone By very early in the year, and tragically, just a few weeks later, he died. I mean, he wasn't in good health when I was talking to him, and it was just really good to talk to him about those years that he knew Bob Dylan and the Beatles, and he introduced them, alas, over a couple of joints, but hey, those were the times back then. Anyway, times are a-changing, and my day and time will be changing on Dave's Gone By. Go to davesgoneby.org to keep posted on the show and where it will be later in January and for the rest of 2006 on this station. Now, we'll get back to more talk and music on Dave's Gone By, including one of my favorite guests of the whole year, who made the trek all the way out to Babylon, the post-punk new wave semi-legend Reckless Eric. And I was going to talk to him about, you know, his years with the Stiff label and touring and drinking and all that stuff, and we did get into it. But amazingly enough, we spent like the first half of our conversation talking about the New York subways and Coney Island.
I went to Coney Island. I went with my girlfriend on Sunday. We went to Coney Island.
Cool.
Have you been there?
Not since I was a child.
We went on the big wheel, you know. She said, look, you've got to go on the big wheel. It's Coney Island. And then we get there, and I'm looking, and it looks a bit high, you know, and I don't want to say, I've never actually been on a big wheel before. I'm a bit nervous, you know. I said, right, okay, yeah, I'm up for it, yeah. we could take a static carriage, or we could take one of the swinging ones. And I'm sort of like, what do you mean a swinging one? She said, well, it kind of slides. And I'm thinking, I don't want to know about this. And so you can see all these wimpy looking people, not many people, queuing up to get in the static carriages. And then there's all these sort of hard nuts, and they're getting asked, do you want to go swinging or static? And they're going, swinging. You know, and I'm thinking, and we're standing there in the swinging queue, and we're the most soft-looking people in it, and we're both starting to get nervous. So, but we get in it, and it's like a metal cage, you know, and you get clamped into it, locked in it, and I think, how are we going to get out of this? You know, what if they don't want to let us out? So that's all a bit nerve-wracking, and then the thing goes up, and you're thinking, this is very nice, here it goes, nothing to it really, lovely view. Get to the top, you're on top of the world there, looking down all over Coney Island. Suddenly it lurches over, and the whole car slides. It sort of plummets into space.
Wait, this isn't a Ferris wheel.
Yes, it is, yeah. But this thing is on a sliding contraption, so suddenly the whole of the world drops beneath you, and you're plummeting, you're free-falling over Coney Island in a red metal cage with a seat in it.
And remember, this is fun. This is Americans' idea of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
Was this fun for you?
It was terrifying.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And of course, you know, I don't want to look like a pussy in front of my girlfriend, do I, you know?
Yeah, so, no, like a cat, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like some, you know... Well, so, like, Bob, we're both terrified, you know. So it starts to get, eventually, it starts to go down. And
if you've ever gone down with a push, I'm not even going to go there.
You know,
I'm, yeah.
So it goes down, and I'm thinking, this is fine. Right, okay, well, glad that's over. I managed to, it doesn't stop. It gets to the bottom, and it carries on. And I think, oh, no, we're going up again. We've got to go through this whole damn thing again, which we did. And it was, I thought, it can't be as bad the second time, and it was worse.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I think it's because I knew what was happening. So we get out of that one, and like...
And then you had three Frankfurters in a shake or something.
No, not at all. No. I had to walk around a bit to get over that.
Here's a little song called The Worst Date I Ever Done Had. I was grabbing her ass when she farted. Now I can't get the smell off my clothes. It's been lingering on since we parted, like a half-rotted corpse in my nose. We had gone for Chinese food in Dallas. I had squid and she had General Tso. Later on, when I showed her my phallus, she just lifted her left cheek and pow. When I left off ring in my eyes. On the couch lay a brown ruddy spear, and I swear there were scorch marks on her thighs. She'd rather be alone, but my shirts had to be disinfected, and my hands soaked for hours in cologne. I was grabbing her ass when she farted. Maybe that was a sign that we sinned. So I sit singing this broken hearted.
Opening for Joan Rivers in Palm Beach, though I think of it as Bomb Beach.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my God.
But you could play to that audience. You have funny songs.
Yeah, the stars, the cards were stacked against me. It was billed as An Evening with Joan Rivers.
Okay.
And it was sold out as An Evening with Joan Rivers. And then turns out her show is 75 minutes long, which is typical for, you know, that kind of performer. And so they wanted a 30-minute opener, and they said, don't worry, we'll put your name in the marquee and we'll put a thing in the program, which they did neither. I gotta say, Joan Rivers and her people were so nice to me. But this is what they told me.
How long ago was this, by the way?
7 years, maybe.
Okay.
So what happened is, they said, Joan Rivers is going to introduce you, so when you hear her say your name, immediately walk out. So I'm standing in the wings, and they make this announcement, ladies and gentlemen, please turn off all cell phones and cam, no taking pictures. And then you hear Joan Rivers' voice. She goes, oh, hi, everybody. Well, now we're going to have an opening act. This is the best I can find in my price range. Your name is Christine Levin. So I heard my name, and they said, as soon as you hear your name, walk out.
No.
So I walk out, and I'm standing there, and she's still talking. It's just her voice. She's backstage.
Yeah,
they can't see her.
Oh, yeah.
And because where I'm standing, I can't understand what it's like. And she's going on and on, and I'm standing there and standing there and standing there. And then she goes, so please welcome Christine Levin. They meant the second time to walk out.
Yeah.
So I start out there, and people are there, and I see them rippling through the program like, who the hell is this? What? And so I started to play, and it was really, it started off as like golf applause. And then I made a really big error. I played Bald-Headed Men. And there were a lot of guys there with rugs on their heads. And I actually went
Miami,
out.
Or,
I spied on the audience. It was Palm Beach. It was even worse than I saw there were a lot of guys there who had toupees and ball gowns. And I thought, oh, they'll like the song. Well, that was like death. Mm-hmm. And then I could see that the light from was hitting my guitar and was like people were sort of squinting as the light hit them. So I'm trying to move around in a way that I'm not hitting one person all the time. And I realize, oh my God, I'm moving like a spaz. I wonder if they think there's something wrong with me. I better explain. So I said to them, I'm sorry. I know I'm moving sort of funny, but I see the light. My guitar is hitting you in the eyes, and I'm trying to blind you all equally. I said, I'm trying to blind you all equally. That's not what I meant, but that's what I said.
Well, that's a good line, though.
They already hate me, and they're going, now you're trying to blind them. And then the cat calls, trying to go, get off the stage!
No.
Oh, yeah. Who are you? We're Joan Rivers. We love Joan Rivers. We hate you. Spare us! Oh, I promised Joan's people that I would do 30 minutes.
The full, yeah.
Because that's what they wanted. And it never occurred to me that maybe I should walk off. So I just, it was just death.
Oh, that's
it went
brutal.
Out of, but then at the very end, I twirl batons. And I twirl batons that glow in the dark. And all the lights are supposed to go off, but the lights didn't go off. So I'm twirling and twirling these lit batons in full light. And finally, I mean, I was so exasperated, but I was so lucky I was still alive and I've been through it. I threw the baton up as high as I could possibly throw it, and at the very, very, very top of its trajectory, the lights went off. And baton came down, and I caught it. And I got this mock applause. Yay! Get up! Walked off the stage. I go to my dressing room, and I started to cry. Yeah. I was like, oh, my God. Because my agent said, oh, this will be so wonderful. Joan's going to love you. She's going to take you all over the world performing with her. So I'm in the dressing room, and I'm crying. And then the producer of the show comes in and goes, oh, Christine, you were wonderful. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, don't let a few rude people ruin it for you. You were wonderful. I said, I was there. Hey, he goes, would you like to go down and say hello to Joan before she goes? I was like, no. Get me out of here. So I ran back to the hotel. I flew back to New York the next day, and three times the promoter left messages. Christine, Joan Rivers came out on stage and said, wasn't Christine Lavin wonderful? Oh, and there was such a roar of approval. I called them back and said, look, I was there. You're a very nice man. It's
very nice of him to say it.
I was there. So that was...
Oh, my gosh.
That's why I think of it as Bomb Beach.
What's playing on Broadway? I'll tell you what's playing on Broadway, and I'll do it by checking Performing Arts Insider. Off-Broadway. You keep adding offs, they'll keep adding listings. Who's in the cast? What's it about? Why is it special? Performing Arts Insider is Broadway the best way. 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Or see PerformingArtsInsider.com.
Oh my God, the wedding is next month! We need flyers, invitations, booklets, Irving, we are screwed!
No, we're not, Pearl. We'll just go to Hewlett Minuteman Press.
Hewlett Minuteman? What can they do?
Printing, engraving.
Really?
Letterheads, souvenirs.
Wonderful! Are they still at 1315 Broadway in Hewlett?
Yep. 516-569-5577.
Well, stop dawdling, let's go!
Yes, dear. Day after the wedding, I kill her.
Shalom, goddammit. This is Rabbi Sol Solomon of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York. And this segment is called, Is It Good for the Jews? It is an important question. For some of us, the most important question as it pertains to every aspect of Jewish life. Tonight, the illness of Pope John Paul III. If the Pope goes plop, where does it stop? Now, on the one hand, Pope J.P. has been a fairly benign presence. He stresses peace and cooperation among nations. He's encouraged tolerance and human rights across the world. And he's done pretty well for a Polak. And I can say that because I have Polish blood in me. In fact, my grandfather was a hunter in the old country. We knew he was Polish because one time he had packed his gear and he was driving to the campsite and he saw a sign reading, Bear Left. So he went home. But seriously, damn it, the Pope visited Israel. He acknowledged it as our legitimate homeland. He went to Yad Vashem. He denounced anti-Semitism. And his visit to Poland in 1998 hastened the end of communism there. It's good to remember that in the old days, popes would start wars, inquisitions, all these deadly political intrigues. Nice to know the current pontiff may be powerless, but he's not a putz, except on a few things. You can't really expect the leader of the Catholic Church to turn liberal on abortion, but at least allow condoms as an alternative. 25 million people with AIDS in Africa, and you wouldn't let them wear rubbers? Thousands of children starving to death in India, but couples should make more children? Hundreds of babies in this country, abused, unloved, unwanted, unaffordable. But slapping a Trojan on your schmeckel is against God's will? On the other hand, the nation of Israel is a teeny tiny one. Not just the state of Israel, the people. The census says there's roughly 14 million Jews in the world. Sounds like a lot, but that's out of 6.5 billion other people. and our 14 million is shrinking. Except for the Orthodox, who stoop like bunnies, thank God, else there'd be none of us. And if the conservative and reformed and reconstructionists would put away the condoms for a while, we could build back up to 15, 16 million easy. I don't think we'll ever overtake the Puerto Ricans, but we can pass the goddamn Dutch. And so, yes, ultimately, I think this Pope has been good for the Jews. He's sensitive, a poet, an author, maybe because his first name is Carol. Give a boy a girl's name, no wonder he goes into the priesthood. But seriously, I do wish the pontiff a refuah shlema, a full recovery, which I realize is like wishing Orson Welles would make another movie. But, hey, he's the Pope. Maybe he can call on one of those saints he ordained to do him a miracle. If not, let's wish him the best on his journey, wherever that is. And should John Paul get up to heaven and discover that, whoops, Jesus Christ really was just a guy, and the Jews had it right all along, I hope Hashem will go easy on him. Because as goyim in dangerously powerful positions go, he's one of the good ones. Dead popies. Dead popies. Dead popies aren't much fun. They don't preach, they don't pray, all they do is rot away. Dead popies aren't much fun. No, no, no. When popies die, cardinals sob. They want his blessing and his job. Dead popies aren't much fun. No. The Pope is gone, God rest his soul. It's his lone contribution to birth control. Dead popies aren't much fun. Dead popies. Dead popies. Dead popies aren't much fun. One more time for Dominus Finisco. Yes, Dead Popies there, an original composition, I'm sort of proud to say. Actually, that song's become quite popular on DFSX Radio, which is the station that airs vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By every Thursday night at 8 and 11 Eastern. Go check them out. You don't have to live on Long Island or in any particular place that's on the web. Just go to my website, davesgoneby.org, click on over on Thursday nights and hear some old Dave's Gone By shows. Anyway, we're listening to parts of shows from 2005, all sorts of songs and bits and stories, and jokes. One of the things I did at my father's birthday time was to get him on the air. I've had him on a few times, and this time I asked him to just tell some jokes.
Why don't you tell the first joke? I didn't bring my Ooga horn, which I should have, but I do have the comedy bell with me. So I'm going to grab the comedy bell, and while I'm doing that, why don't you start us off with a couple of the jokes that you brought in to share with us today.
Okay. Well, I had this one that I remembered about a fella who went out and spent a couple hundred dollars on scuba gear.
Mm-hmm.
And he went swimming, and he goes down about 10 feet, and there's a guy with just a mask and fins. So he figures he's got to do better than that. So he goes down 20 feet, and there's the same guy with the mask and fins. So he goes down 30 feet. Still the same guy is with him. When they get down to 40 feet, he can't stand it anymore. He grabs the guy around the neck, drags him up to the surface, rips off the mask, says, "What the hell are you doing down there with just a mask and fins?" And the guy says, "Drowning."
Very cute. And that's worth one ring. Yeah, that's a good, nice, lumbering joke. Very funny.
All righty.
Next? Yeah.
Then there was the one about the girl who was walking down the street. I want to apologize to the female listeners in advance.
Oh, I have to do that every
Okay.
Okay, so this is going to be a horribly sexist and offensive joke. Go, Dad.
So.
This is my father, ladies. Philip Lefkowitz. He lives in Hewlett, Long Island.
I got
phone number.
My son is part of me.
Okay,
it's
so...
It was inheritance in reverse.
All right, so woman's walking down the street.
Right.
And?
And a hen comes out of an alley, girl grabs her around the throat, and pulls her into the alley. Fellow.
Oh, that's something. Yeah. Sorry.
This fellow has his way with her.
Okay.
Now, while the guy is putting himself back together, she is lying on the ground crying hysterically and carrying on to a fairly well. And he says, he's moved. He says, look, lady. He says, I know it's not a nice thing to be taken by a strange man. He says, but it's not the end of the world either. She says, but how do I go home and tell my family I was raped twice by a strange man? He says, but I only raped you once. She says, what's the matter? You're in a hurry?
Two rings. And thank you. We talked about this joke before. You were going to clean it up a little, and you did. And I think it worked. I think it was perfect. You only brought in the word rape towards the very end. It had the shock value, but it wasn't disgusting early on.
Okay.
Early on, it was just sexual molestation, which is perfectly okay by me. Dave gets trivial. Dave gets trivial. Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Time for a segment I haven't done in ages, but I kind of miss. It's called Dave Gets Trivial. Sometimes it's where I get interested in a subject and dig up a little research on it to share with all of you. Other times, I just come across some weird or goofy bit of trivia, and I've got no other place to talk about it, so here's as good as any. First, we get trivial with illness. What could be more fun than making fun of the sick? But I discovered the most amazing disease. Well, I shouldn't say I discovered it. I've uncovered it. I've noticed its existence, and now I'm going to share it with you. Come close to the speaker. Don't worry, it's not catching. My wife and I were surfing a medical website because her aunt has been in the hospital, and we wish Aunt Helen a speedy recovery, by the way. But we were researching stuff about her condition when we came across this huge list of aches and ailments, everything from bronchial to venereal to inguinal to the common cold. And one of the sicknesses on this list I'd never heard of before. It's quite rare, it's quite serious, but you wouldn't necessarily know that from the name. MSUD, MSUD, which stands for, and I am not kidding, maple syrup urine disease. Let us digest that for a moment. Not, wrong word. Maple syrup urine disease and its corollary, intermittent maple syrup urine disease. It has to do with an inability to metabolize amino acids, and it's actually deadly if untreated in newborns and infants. The name comes from the fact that a telltale sign of MSUD is the baby's pee smells like maple syrup. I don't know. Anybody going into a bathroom after I've used it probably thinks that I have Armenian death camp poop disease. 99 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 99 barrels of oil. If one of those barrels should happen to fall into the hands of Saddam Hussein loyalists, there'd be 98 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 98 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 98 barrels of oil. If one of those barrels should happen to fall off the transport truck and into the Arabian Sea, the market price would go up to $65 and there'd be 97 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 97 barrels of oil. If two of those barrels should happen to disappear from their storage facility, along with three rocket launchers and a Grumman surface-to-air missile, there'd be 95 barrels of oil in the Gulf,
95 barrels of oil in the Gulf, 95 barrels of oil. If 10 of those barrels should happen to be next to an Iraqi terrorist who blows himself up, killing himself, two police trainees, and an American contractor, there'd be 86 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 86 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 86 barrels of oil. If 31 of those barrels should happen to disappear and make their way across the border to Libya without the House of Saud knowing anything about it, honest, there'd be 55 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 55 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 55 barrels of oil. If 19 of those barrels should happen to spring a slow leak that nobody discovers until Osama bin Laden mentions them in a mocking speech on Al Jazeera, there'd be 36 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 36 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 36 barrels of oil. If 27 of those barrels should happen to be stolen by Hamas and then used to create a fireball that torches 8 Israeli nightclubs, there'd be 9 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 9 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 9 barrels of oil. If 6 of those barrels should happen to actually be filled with sand, even though the Syrians were paid millions and millions of dollars for their highest grade crude, there'd be 3 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 3 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 3 barrels of oil. If one of those barrels should happen to be smuggled onto an American Airlines jet, hijacked by 2 Pakistanis wielding really scary-looking box cutters as they crash into the 38th floor of the Empire State Building, there'd be 2 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 2 barrels of oil in the Gulf. 2 barrels of oil. If one of those barrels should happen to be used up by all the gas-guzzling SUVs and four-wheel minis that people are still buying, even though there's only 2 f***ing barrels of oil left, there'd be 1 barrel of oil in the Gulf. 1 barrel of oil in the Gulf. 1 barrel of oil. If the current administration actually realizes there's a shortage crisis, well, first they invade Iran, Kuwait, and North Korea, during which Al-Qaeda regroups and joins with South American drug lords to attack Western Europe. This forces America, England, and Canada to declare war on South America, Central America, and Pakistan, causing Russia and China to form an alliance and use Cuba as a nuclear launch site, which quickly demolishes the lower half of the United States, while the upper half targets the Arab and Asian continents. But their chemical weapons go off course and accidentally hit Africa and New Zealand as well. So Australia launches retaliatory strikes at Washington, New York, and Chicago, which all go up in a massive vortex of smoke and debris and body parts, as do all the other continents and countries except for the Antarctic region, where the few remaining Eskimos live off fish and penguins for a while. But those die from radiation, which eventually poisons the Eskimos too. So basically, all of the wildlife, nature, and humanity sinks into the ground, which at this point is just a radioactive desert of muck and debris. But after a few million years, vegetation appears, which leads to small bodies of water and multicellular organisms that soon turn into fish and reptiles and flying reptiles that become birds and big fish that crawl on the sand and become bears and giraffes and monkeys, which, over time, get smaller, less hairy, and walk upright. First men, then women, and they learn to hunt and fish and gather food. And thanks to oceanic tides and the decomposition of diatoms and other organic matter, there's 99 billion gallons of oil in the Gulf. But the cavemen don't care, because what do they know from oil, right? All they care about is food and fresh water. So they organize into tribes and start stockpiling, which leads to trading and deals and occasional hostilities. And one tribe has 99 gallons of water in its cave, while the other tribe has only 31 gallons of water. Well, you can probably guess what happens in the rest of the scenario, so I'm just going to stop and grab a beer.
Hey, baby. For a good time, don't call me. Read Dave Lefkowitz's book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. It's got all these funny comedies in it, and they make you laugh, they make you think, they make you, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. 516-295-1511 or email davesgoneby@AOL.com. If you like Dave on the air, you'll love him between the covers. Do you know how easy and inexpensive it is to advertise on Dave's Gone By? You don't? Well, hey, it's even easier to find out. You can run a 30 or 60 second ad or sponsor a show segment or the whole show. Just go to davesgoneby.org to see the rates or call 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511. Bring your message to my audience. Advertise on Dave's Gone By. Shalom, shalom, goddammit. Welcome to this segment of the Dave's Gone By radio program. I am so pleased, I am so honored, I am so thrilled to have this next guest with us. It is a machaya to have this person to talk to because he is so well known in the entertainment industry, both for doing regular things and for doing Jewish things. And we're going to talk about both with the amazing, the wonderful, the beautiful Mandy Patinkin. Mandy, how are you today, dammit? Mandy?
You know what? I'm going to cut this interview short. I didn't realize that there was a lot of foul language, accompanied with it.
So. There's not four-legged words. This is radio.
The way you were saying things. So I wish you well, and take care. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, damn it. What a fabulous, fascinating interview that was with Mandy Patinkin. What the hell is Mandy from anyway? What is that, short for Mandrew? I don't know, but what? He hears the word goddammit, his head explodes? I've been using that word since I was born, before I was born. In the womb I was saying goddammit. Well, let me tell you something, big shot, big deal, who cares, Mandy Patinkin, eh? I was not going to be using any four-legged words, three-legged words. God is a three-legged word. I can't even count the number of letters in goddammit, in Hebrew or in English. But let me tell you, you will get yours, you son of a bitch. I mean, you were very nice. You weren't nasty the way you are, apparently, to all your underlings and folks like that. But no, you were calm and approachable, and you sounded like we were going to have a wonderful interview, but oh, then you heard my voice, and then, oh, he's too Jewish, oh, he's angry Jewish, oh, he might use a bad, naughty word that I never heard before. First of all, you're lucky the interview didn't go through, because I wasn't just going to ask you about your stupid new show on Channel 2, I think it is, where you're playing some kind of investigative thingy. Who cares what the hell it was called? Quantico. It was a bad title. You probably thought of it. Then they changed the name to Criminal Minds, which you probably have, you son of a bitch. And then what else are you doing? Oh, yes, you're doing this big deal thing for the Yiddish thing. You're doing Mama Lotion. Oh, yes, you don't want to offend all the 60 and 70 and 80-year-old Jews on the way to the nursing homes by saying or thinking anything bad. Oh, no. So you got to do this Yiddish stuff that's all everything was sweetness and light for Jews when they were singing these songs. No, the Russians were smashing things in pogroms. They were torturing Jews. There was a blood libel because everybody thought Jews went out and killed children. But no, we just sing the nice songs about the Cheder. No, Jews were never herded into ovens by Nazis. That didn't actually happen. We don't talk about it. We only say the nice words and we only think the good things.
There are many ways to say you. There are many ways to say go yourself, like burn in hell, like take a flying leap, or I'd love to see your whole family in a flaming train accident and piled up in a heap. There are many ways to say you and your ugly children. There are many ways to say eat and die, like up yours, buddy, or kiss my ass, or it would be worth it to die in Auschwitz if I could just see you gassed. So many ways to express hate. So many ways. Isn't that great? We don't have to blaspheme or curse to wish a person illness and worse. There are many ways to say I could hurt you. There are many ways to call you a mother piece of like choke on your own blood, or drop dead, you jerk, or I hope an AIDS victim bites you and the chemo doesn't work. So many ways, so many ways, so many sucking ways to say you.
Extra, classic episodes of Dave's Gone By here, show after show of comedy, music, and madness, as only Dave can do it. Only $12 per CD. Relive great moments like The Giving Chimp, and musical magic like Making Poopies. Classic Dave's Gone By, just $12. Makes a bizarre but thoughtful gift. For a list of shows, see davesgoneby.org or email davesgoneby@aol.com. Extra, classic Dave. Get 'em while they're hot. We are talking with Jill Sabule, singer-songwriter, on the Dave's Gone By Show. I am Rabbi Saul Solomon, the head of Temple Sons of Bitches in Great Neck, New York, and we're asking her about her wonderful music and also getting back to her sex life, which is the most interesting thing, of course.
I wish it was the most interesting thing. And here's the deal, okay? Because when I play, you know, and I'll be interested. Like, I won't be in my old Jewish grandmother's phase. Like, I'm in, like, who cares? But so boys, a lot of boys think, like, I'm interested, but she only likes girls. And then so they don't do anything, and then the girls think, oh, she just likes guys. So you can't win.
Well, what if you were a little more forward? What if there was a boy or a girl that you liked and you said, hey, you know, maybe after the show, you and me, we could go to shul together. We could study Talmud.
Go to shul together.
You can unroll my scroll, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, that is such a good pickup line.
Yeah. Think about it. So, I don't want to open any wounds or anything, but why the last serious relationship, why did that not happen? Or why did that stop happening?
Well, I think I've learned something. I was telling someone that I used to think someone who was kind of on the darker side and had, not complexion, but, you know, darker side and had, you know, this kind of mystery.
Could you speak of just
a painful artist type, and I used to be really intrigued with that, and that's what I go for. And then just recently I've realized, no, that's mental illness.
You got me on that one. Granted, I am completely mentally ill. I'm on the dark side 98.3% of the time. And even the other 1% is gray. So there's not really a happy time for me. It's always anger and rage. But it keeps me going.
But see, this is what I'm getting to. But so, my last relationship, I thought, well, it wasn't my last big relationship, but someone who I dated, I thought, I'm going to go for someone who's just really stable, really kind of together. And it was so boring.
Was he Jewish? Male or female there?
This one was a female.
Oh, good. tell me more. Well, let's face it, come on. You know, it's normal, you know, the thing of one man, woman, but when I hear two girls, it's like, aha, tell me more.
How come you don't hear the two women going, the two guys, yeah, uh-huh.
Well, I don't go to those bars, but you know. Seriously. I noticed in your bio that at one point you were the voice of the girlfriend of a skunk. Is this true?
It's true.
What? Tell me, how did this happen?
Well, I think that was just a lucky deal, Peter, because I was quite young at the time. I didn't know that much about how hard something like this is to get, you know, to get cast or something like that. And Mel Blanc was the skunk, and he was called Pepe, as in Pepe Le Pew.
That's right.
And when I got to the studio, and he used to play 4/5 of all of the voices in all of the cartoons that he was in, sometimes all of them, because he was extremely talented and wonderful. And when I came in, you know, I was not him, you know. He wanted to do my part too, so he was kind enough to allow me to do my thing, which was things like, oh, you know, and Pepe was chasing after this cat all the time,
right,
who didn't want to be near him because he smelled as in a skunk. So I would do things like le purr, and he would, you know, that would just turn him on some more.
Well, let's do this. I'll be Pepe.
Yes.
And you, what was the name of your cat?
She was just the cat.
We'll
his
call
romance,
her
his significant other.
His pussy. You were his pussy.
You might call her that, yes.
Okay. So I'll be Pepe, yes. And I'll be all long serene, wah, wah, wah. Well, this is very difficult for me because
you're
female.
No, you got it, Peter. You got it. Mm, wah. And you do the wah, wah, kind of thing. He would
yes.
do that.
And you do your purring thing. Oh. She is hot for me, I can tell. Well, I'm something like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Do we have a quiz? The other quiz?
Oh, we do. I'm going to ask like one or two quick questions, and then we've really got to zip through the categories. Thank you, Jeff.
My goal is to make sure we don't finish.
We're not.
The interesting thing is, every year except this year on Two on the Isle, we have our Tony Awards show.
Yeah.
And we have Dave, and we have a half hour. And we just barely finish it, and sometimes we have to leave out a few categories. Here we have 3 hours, and we still haven't finished to do it.
All right, well, two quick questions, and then we go right to it, okay? In 1960, these are not heavy-duty theater questions, because our audience, I figure, is a mix of people who really love the theater or may just be first finding out about it. So, in 1960, the Tonys had a rare tie for Best Musical, Fiorello and The Sound of Music. What made the tie extra surprising is that these two shows beat out another landmark musical, which had a book by Arthur Lorentz and music by Julie Stein. Name
don't
the musical.
Give it away.
Well,
oh, wait,
leave a couple of seconds for the people at home. But now, guys, what's the answer?
West Side Story.
Which was originally called?
No.
No?
You're wrong.
No.
Arthur Lorentz, Julie Stein, the music.
Oh,
Gypsy.
Gypsy,
that's right.
Gypsy was
scored by Stephen Sondheim. Mm-hmm. And you know what? The Tony for Best Musical Actress was not won by Ethel Merman. She was beaten by Mary Martin for Sound of Music. Go figure. One more trivia question. 1995 was a tough year for new musicals on Broadway, but one stood out. Not only did this show win Best Musical, beating out only one other nominee, it won Best Book for a Musical and Best Score for a Musical because it was the only nominee in the category.
And what theater did it play in?
I don't know. What theater? Well, maybe
it played it played at the Anta Theater.
The Anta? What was it?
Didn't it? It was... Oh, I'm trying to...
Were they calling it the Anta at that time?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
I might be the Virginia.
That sounds more like... What's the musical, Jeff?
It's... I'm trying to remember the tap the dancer who was about. It was Gregory Hines...
No, you're right. It's not Jelly's Last Jam.
Jelly's Last Jam, no?
No. It was the only, it had one other nominee for Best Musical, and there were no other people in the categories book or score.
I'm trying to think of who.
1995.
Hmm.
Wow.
That's Staircase. Right. Two levels.
Musical.
I'm going to have to give it to you.
So, are we talking a Lloyd Webber musical? It sounds like... No, but that wasn't at that theater. But Sunset Boulevard?
That was it.
But that was at the...
you mentioned the theater. I didn't see it.
That was at the Gershwin.
Right.
Yeah. No, you threw us off with the theater, but it
wasn't
at the
Gershwin,
Boulevard.
By the way. It was at the Minskoff, but you closed.
And actually,
I think it was at the Gershwin.
Even in
it was at the Minskoff.
Actress. Well, it certainly wasn't the Anta, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Okay. One quick
thing. Now that we've gotten both those easy questions wrong,
well, it looks like we're going to be learning with Dave Gordon.
And well qualified theater critics.
Yeah. By the way, even in the Best Actress in a Musical category, Glenn Close beat out only one other nominee. I mean, it was that kind of year for musicals, and that was Rebecca Luker for Showboat. So let's get back to the categories, though, because we don't have a lot of time, but... I should have left more time for the quiz. That was kind of cool. D is for Dave, F is for fun, S is for silly and special, X is for excellent entertainment, DFSX Internet Radio, playing vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By, Thursday nights at 8 and 11. It's part of Live 365, but all you've got to do is visit davesgoneby.org, click the link, and listen online to classic Dave's Gone By, Thursdays 8 and 11. DFSX, letters that stand for terrific.
Leave your friends alone. No, I don't mean push them aside. I mean if they need a loan for a mortgage or a house renovation or to buy a new house, you can help them by joining MortgagesRock.com. They can show you the ins and outs of mortgage originations, making it easy. All you got to do is bring in the clients, tell them how they can get their loans, and you get the commission. Very cool, very simple. Go to the website, MortgagesRock.com. Licensed in New York State and all over the place, MortgagesRock.com. Welcome back to this special backtrack edition of Dave's Gone By on this, the first week of 2006. I hope you've enjoyed all the skits and sketches and songs and interviews that I've played. By the way, in the last set, just so you know, that was Rabbi Sol Solomon interviewing Jill Sobule, of course. Then played Peter Fitzgerald and his chat with cabaret singer and actress Paulette Attie. And finally, a clip from our Big Tony Show, our three-hour special coinciding with the Tony Awards. And that was Charlie Gross and Jeff Goodman helping out on the theater quiz there. I'm Dave Lefkowitz, and again, I host Filler Up on Dave's, on WGBB, and I host Dave's Gone By on WGBB. Now, one or both of those shows will be moving later this month and staying in that noon time slot for the rest of the year. So please, I wish I could tell you exactly when and what day. You got to go to my website to find out, davesgoneby.org, or you can email me, davesgoneby@aol.com, and we'll certainly let you know when Dave's Gone By is going to be back. I mean, it'll be third or fourth week in January, and Filler Up, at what point it's going to move. I mean, I think it's staying put right now on Saturdays at 9 p.m., and also Thursdays at 9, but the Thursday may move. It's all complicated. Ask your congressman. Anyway, thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, as always, to Program Director Tom Ross, to my wonderful and beloved wife, Joyce, to my family, to everyone who deserves a Happy New Year, certainly a wonderful 52 weeks ahead. This is Dave Lefkowitz wishing you a good night, a good year, and gone by.
I will go a merry way and jump the hedges first. Drink the clear, clean water for to quench my thirst. And I will watch the ferry boats and they'll get high. Against the blue ocean, against the tomorrow sky. And I will walk and talk in gardens all wet with spring. Never, ever, never, ever get so old again. Sweet things.